You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
The time now is 19:12, and with us I have our guest Muyowa. Muyowa, can you hear me?
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am doing great, thank you. Are you up for an icebreaker? I think I want to do a bit of an icebreaker with you so that we get to know a bit about you, and before we have our conversations, for us to have a good sense of who is talking to us. Are you up for it?
Okay, we're doing icebreakers in this raining cold weather.
Okay, let's not call it an icebreaker. Let's call it a warmer. Okay.
Yes.
All right. So because our theme today is cybersecurity, I thought let's play a game called Hack or Protect. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I will give you a series of rapid-fire scenarios related to both cybersecurity and your personal life. Again, if you don't want to go too deep, there's absolutely no need, but we would love to get to know you a bit better. So for each question, you must decide whether you would hack, which is to break or change or disrupt whatever the question is, or protect, which is to keep, to secure, or to defend it. Okay?
Okay.
Question number one. Your youngest self's biggest mistake. Would you hack it? Would you change it? Or would you protect it? Keep it as a lesson?
I would hack it.
Okay. Do you want to tell us what it was? Or because you'd hack it, you won't tell us?
just repeat the question again.
So your younger self's biggest mistake.
My biggest mistake, I think, was opening my mother's radio and really dismantling it to pieces.
No.
With the hope of trying to fix it, and she wasn't happy about it.
Oh, you got a good idea, didn't you?
Yeah, I managed to get it to work.
Oh.
Yeah, but it took me a couple of days, though.
All right.
But I managed to put it together and it worked.
So why would you change that? I mean, you're an inventor. Or okay, not maybe an inventor, an innovator.
No, so I would hack that. As in, I would actually still do the same thing.
Oh, so you'd protect it. You'd keep it as, okay, not as a lesson. Okay, oh. But I hear you. Let's move to the next question.
Yes.
All right. Your first email address. Would you hack it? Do you wish you'd chosen a different one? Or would you protect it? Are you proud of what you created?
I would protect it.
Okay.
It's one of those email addresses that I use that no one actually knows about.
But then, how do people contact you?
They use my other email address.
So what purpose does it serve?
Sorry?
What purpose does it serve then?
It actually serves as the backup to the well-known email address.
Got you.
Yeah, and I think a lot of my really important things go to that email address, like my banking, notification on the well-known email address. Yeah. So that email address, I don't think there's anyone who knows it, actually.
Okay, it's proper protected.
Yeah.
All right. Question number three, your social media privacy settings. Would you hack them, as in loosen them for fun, or protect them, keep them locked down?
I would hack them.
Okay.
The reason is, so I recently recovered my phone. Hello?
We lost you there for a sec. Yes, you recently recovered your phone?
Facebook account.
Yeah?
I don't have Instagram.
Okay.
And what I share on my social media is what I want the world to know.
Mm.
No more. Yeah. So you don't find a lot of personal stuff there anymore.
Okay.
But I do share random things. Like, for example, even my WhatsApp, my status, my profiles.
Yeah.
Very, almost nothing personal, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you'd loosen up a bit for fun.
I would loosen up a bit for fun because I don't want to, I want people to find information that I want to disclose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Second last question. A talent of yours that people don't know about, would you hack it, as in change it, or would you protect it, embrace it?
I would protect it.
Okay. Do you want to tell us what it is, since nobody else knows?
So when I was a kid, I learned how to play the piano at 13
All right.
without any, what's the word for it? Without any sort of formal teaching or anything. I just learned how to play it. And I enjoyed playing it at my church, and then I all of a sudden just stopped and people forgot about the fact that I could actually play the piano. But I do play it in my own personal capacity. I've got a keyboard at home that I sometimes play music on. Yeah, but at church, you're not sitting in front of a keyboard.
Do you sing as well?
No, not in a choir, not in a group or a choir.
Oh, so you sing alone when you play the piano at home alone.
The nice thing about it is I can quickly tell when the key is too high or low at church, which is kind of like a pet peeve.
Of course. Because people sing and without regard, right? It's like, can't you guys hear? All right. Here's our final question. If you could hack into any historical moment and witness it live, which one would you pick?
That's a tough one. That's a tough one. I guess it has to be one of the Old Testament scenarios with maybe a king. Lately, I've been thinking of King Hezekiah, who receives this letter from the Syrians that they're going to attack him. And then he takes that letter into the house of God, and then he spreads it before God, and then he prays and he says, "Are you seeing what these people are doing?" I think for me, sort of amazing to see, because in those days, the soldiers sort of based their. If the king was shaking, you'll be sure the whole thing is running away. So it'd be interesting to see how they would that scenario would play itself out. So I tend to imagine a lot of things that I read and see, and that would.
That actually sounds very exciting.
It is. If you read the actual story, it's I tend to pause and put myself in the scenario as if I'm a first-hand observer and I'm the one recording history. And this guy, he probably looks at his military budget, it's not there. And then he thinks to himself, the kingdom is going down. And he's like, I've got nowhere else to go to. Yeah.
And he turns to God.
He tends to God, but he tends to God more of, do you see, do you hear?
I
Then
love
send
that.
him a letter saying, he tells you that God will save you. I just think that's insane.
Okay, I do have a wild card that I want to throw out. I know I said that was the last question, but I do have a wild card. Okay. If you had to create an uncrackable password based on your childhood, what would it include?
I don't think I would be able to answer that question.
Because we'd get your password, we'd be able to crack your password.
No. My passwords are absolutely random. Because I would say it couldn't be a friend that I had. It would probably be an experience that I had. A pleasant experience. And probably if I had to then create that password, it would be, let's say the experience was playing the piano, right? Playing the piano. So I'd probably put the password as PTP 20, 2003. Wait, 2003. Yeah, something like that.
Okay. I think that's a nice
Actually, no.
lesson. Okay.
PTP 1998.
All
That will probably
right.
be it.
That's when you were 13.
I think so.
Ah, got it. Got it. I
Yeah.
think that's a great segue into our discussion today, right? So not everyone invests in employee cybersecurity awareness training, especially in the case of hybrid workplaces. In fact, in a 2023 study, a third of companies said they don't provide cybersecurity awareness training for their remote employees. This is despite the fact that 75% of these companies' remote personnel can actually access sensitive data. And just as we cannot forgo using cyberspace, neither can we forgo employee security awareness training. So please let us know whose responsibility is it actually to make sure that cybersecurity is upheld in any organization?
So I would say it's a collective responsibility.
Okay.
Both the employees and the policymakers and management.
Okay.
But I would say the accountability aspect of it sits with management and the policymakers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think I actually went in with the assumption that people know what cybersecurity is. I think we've got a vast audience, right? They're those who deal with this thing every day. But we've got those who actually tune into the show to learn more about tech and innovation and all of those things. So as if I was in grade five, or as if I was a 13-year-old who was self-learning, what is cybersecurity?
Wow. To a five-year-old.
13-year-old. I don't think a five-year-old would get it. So let's think about the 13-year-old guy that you were
yeah.
on piano.
Okay, so to a 13-year-old, cybersecurity would mean any electronic system that is connected to what we call as the internet.
Yeah.
And that system being able to send and receive some sort of information. And cybersecurity would be the protection of that information that is sent and received. So for example, if you have like a TV in the house,
yeah.
cybersecurity for that TV would be the information that that TV is able to receive, how protected is it, and the information that that TV is able to send, how protected is that. Yeah.
I'd never actually thought about it at such a rudimentary level, because I'm thinking, what sort of information would need to be protected over a TV? I mean, I'm just seeing a story.
That's a good question, because when you plug your TV into your home network, your TV talks to other devices on the network.
Tell us more.
And your TV can talk to the computer that you're using at work.
Yep.
For your work. It can talk to the PlayStation. It can talk to
your phone.
The fridge. It can talk to the light bulbs. And some of these other devices, like your phone, has location.
Yeah.
And so your TV could indirectly ask your phone for what is the location.
This is insane. Okay.
All right. I am currently in this specific location, and
yeah.
it would send that information. Yeah. So if someone had control over your TV, they could figure out what devices you've got in the house. And they could interrogate those devices and actually get information from those devices that would be able to give more information to someone who's got control of the TV in terms of where the TV is, if there's any transaction that you're making online on your laptop,
Whoa.
Because it can see the traffic. I mean, it's on the same network. It can see the traffic that you're doing. Yeah.
Okay, this is starting to scare me.
This
is starting to scare me because I'm thinking, ooh, if there were terrorists in the country, my house would be the first one they come to, because I don't think I'm protecting myself as well as I ought to.
Well, it shouldn't, in the sense that if you look at, for example, your TV, and that's why we're having this session today, is how do you protect your TV?
Yes.
So it's not a matter of, oh no, I need to now create a username and a password for my TV. It needs to be very complex.
Yeah.
When it comes to TVs, we just need to keep them updated if they're connected to the internet, where we watch maybe YouTube or whatever we watch, it just needs to be updated. And I think that's pretty much it. So there are very small things that we can do that sort of allow us to protect the information that the devices in the home are sending out and receiving.
Now I'm actually very curious. I'm assuming that this is your line of work. You are in cybersecurity.
That's correct. So I am in cybersecurity. My role is, I play a number of roles at work, depending on who's asking. But I'm a researcher by trade. And there's actually quite a funny story. One day I was carrying desks with my colleagues. And we're loading them onto a car and transporting them across Johannesburg. And I say to them, who knew that researchers would be doing manual labor like this, unscrewing desks and assembling them.
This is not why we went to school.
You know. So I play a number of roles at work. And one of them is cybersecurity, in the sense that I'm an ethical, what you call an ethical hacker. Someone who's given permission. Let's remove big terms and speak to a 13-year-old.
Yes.
Someone who's given permission to break into people's TVs remotely from wherever they are. So if you think about a house, I'm asked, can you find out how someone could break into my house? And I'll show the person, this is how I was able to break into your house, and this is what you need to protect themselves, and they squeeze through these butler bars. More or less what I do.
Sure. Okay. What is the wildest case that you've dealt with of a cyber attack or a data breach? The wildest that you can share with us, if you can.
I'm just thinking. So once upon a time, and this is not a fairy tale, but it's actually a true story. I was investigating, I was doing what we call digital forensics. So digital forensics is someone has broken into the house. Now we're trying to dust off the fingerprints and trying to determine how the person got inside the house, what they had access to, and what they stole. So I was requested to perform some digital forensics for this organization. And this organization had an employee who, when they joined the organization, they were given an offer letter. So, you know, when you join a company, they give you an offer letter, and it's in a PDF format, right? You sign it, and then you send it in, and then you start getting paid when you start your job. So what had happened was finance were reviewing their books, and they realized the amount of money that they had been paying was not where they were supposed to be. There were some leaks and balance. Leaks that they couldn't determine. Eventually, they figured out that the payroll had increased beyond what they had expected. So they started to ask themselves, but why is that? Yeah, but then they realized, no, we had a budgeted amount. Let's say, for example, 10,000 that we're supposed to pay this employee. But this employee is now getting 12,000. And they thought, but who authorized this? And so as they're looking through their processes, they couldn't find the reason. So they then enlisted our services to do forensic investigation on the employee. And because the employee was using a company laptop, they had to surrender it. So we took an image of the laptop. And then when we took an image of the laptop, what we discovered, which was quite interesting, was the day the employee was given the offer letter, they converted that PDF to a Word document, changed the numbers, saved it back to PDF, signed it, sent it in, and it had been a number of months before this was actually discovered. So the fun thing that I realized from that case is our HR people, their goal is not necessarily most of the time to review and verify that the person has signed the correct PDF. Their goal is to make sure that the person signs, especially if they say, for example, they're headhunting someone. And finance, because they've got so much work, they just want that thing to come back. And so this person managed to skip two loopholes, HR and finance, and were getting a higher salary. And that only came as a result of someone reviewing the books and realizing the money allocated towards paying salaries was slightly higher than they had budgeted. Yeah.
And of course that person got fired, right? If not even sued. Because what is that?
They were suspended. That's all.
That's crazy. That's fraud.
They were suspended.
But is it actually?
Because you see, the thing is, when it comes to digital forensics and cases within the workplace, you've got administrative cases, and then you've got, I think, civil.
Yeah.
And then after civil, then it becomes a criminal. I think. I might not be 100% sure in terms of my legal terms, but there are some cases in a nutshell where it's just for control within the organization. Then there are some cases where it's more, they're trying to fix something and it can result in an employee being disciplined, but without actually creating a criminal record.
That makes sense.
Yeah, but then now when a case is criminal, it means that that person now has a criminal record and it now goes to higher levels of, I think, the judicial system. In some cases, some companies don't want to follow that route because maybe the cost of going through that exercise might be high or something. So they just tend to just be happy with normal employee discipline, which remains within their record within the company. That's all.
Sure. I'm so interested now in the story, but we have to capture as much information as we can for the purpose of this conversation. I was about to ask you even more, but can he be arrested? Whose fault was it? But we're not going to get into those. What I'm happy about is that you've actually broken it down so well that everyone can now track with the conversation, right? So I think the fear that I had in the beginning was I don't want any of this information to fly over anyone's head. But now we've got a good understanding of what cybersecurity is. You've brought it home. I think we're all good. We can now move not from assumption, but from the knowledge that everybody is on track now. So given the example that you've just given us, how common are cyber attacks and data breaches in organizations?
They're quite common.
Okay.
I think the CSR did a survey last year where I work for the CSR, so I was supposed to say my employer without disclosing them, but let's give them a little bit of airtime.
Okay.
So they did a survey and they discovered that 2 out of 3 organizations actually did face a cybersecurity breach.
Yeah.
Now, before everyone gets scared, the difference is what was the impact? How many assets were compromised? Without speaking too much big English, what that means is it can be big. Small can be affecting one person and it's quickly stopped. It can be big where the organization completely shuts down. All of that is considered a cybersecurity breach.
And you say it's common?
Yeah, it's common. So 2 out of 3 organizations will typically face a cybersecurity breach in a calendar year.
Because I think the most brushes we have with cybersecurity breaches are when we're watching those American series on TV. So I don't think we actually have a clue how common this is, right? And then how important then, given that 2 out of every 3 organization actually experiences this, how important is cybersecurity awareness training for remote employees, given that a lot of organizations just choose to opt out of it?
Well, it's very important because I'll tell you a story. I grew up in a household where my parents were very strict. Well, they still are. And I have 3 sisters, right? And any guy who wanted to come and speak to any one of my sisters would have it very difficult because my father wouldn't tolerate
of
that
course.
Nonsense. Neither would my mother.
Of course.
And then us, the younger ones, would tell on them. And I remember the first time, I hope my older sister isn't listening. The first time she had a boyfriend, he used to park on the other side of the street, a few streets away. And then he would send me to go and call her to come out.
Yeah.
And with that story, what I'm just trying to explain, and this happens, you know, in African culture, people throw stones or whatever would happen.
Or they whistle. Or they whistle.
So what tends to happen is when you now want, as a male, when you now want to get the lady you're dating out of the house, you would find a way to not, trouble the father.
Yes.
But the daughter would get the message.
Yeah.
And so the importance of cybersecurity is similar to that. If you would consider the father the security tools or the security controls or whatever we have in place, the daughter being, the employee,
yeah,
it's similar to that. So threat actors try and find ways to basically get to the employee without the father actually realizing it. You know, that someone is trying to talk to my daughter and my daughter's about to sleep out the house, So it's very similar to that. And a lot of employees think, as long as the father is there, the security controls are there, we are sorted. Let's spend the budget. Let's invest in the security. But at the same time, without realizing that, the daughter is interested in someone who will go to the lengths of trying to move around the father to get to her.
So it does sound like the ways that these, and I'm going to call them terrorists, right? Or the threats. Let me say threats. The way that these threats come in.
Threat actors.
Are in ways that are enticing to whoever's on the other side of the screen, right? You're phishing, you're spamming, and things like that. Yeah. You're still tuned into Business Sense with your host, Mpumi K. Bonani. And on the line, I've got Muyoa, and he's speaking to us about cybersecurity and data breach. Do you realize that in telling us about what your sister used to do, you were actually practicing data breach? Giving us
more or less, yes.
All right. Many public sector organizations struggle with limited funding, limited employee counts, and or tight specialization restrictions, right? And this leads to a limited staff of identified or in-house security professionals. So what's the solution for identifying risks and threats and reacting accordingly?
Yeah, look, one of the things that organizations need to do is you do what is called a gap analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And a gap analysis, if you explain it in simple terms, is you look at what you have right now. What do we have in terms of the security tools that we have, mm-hmm. if it's firewalls or antivirus systems or, email gateways or internet proxies?
Yeah.
And where do we want to go? And that difference between where we are now and where we want to go in terms of our strategy, that ends up being the gap analysis. And then you can then plan and say, okay, some of these things we can achieve them in a 3 months period, a 6 months period, 1 year, 2 years, 5 years. And basically that then helps an organization to plan and decide where they want to go.
But in the event that there aren't enough funds to then move in that direction, or the well-resourced people to do it, what then happens? Is there a way around it?
That's a very good question, because the reality that we face in our country is that a lot of organizations either don't have the funding to buy these tools and licenses, and sometimes they don't have the people to actually test stuff. And the directive from management is fix it. We need to move, fix it. One of the interesting things that I've seen is being at an organization when they've suffered a breach. You then get to realize not all government departments are equal, or not all private sector companies are equal. Yeah. So what do companies do? I think that's a very good question. What they can do is they can start small, right? When I say they can start small, this is what I mean in simple terms. Identify what is the most critical thing, right? So let's say, for example, we've got a company that does business and they realize, the most critical thing is our bank account. The online banking credentials or password, username and password. How do we protect that, right? So once you've realized what is the most critical thing that we need to educate ourselves on and protect ourselves of, you then educate yourself. Try and learn as much as possible how to protect your bank account information. So that means that maybe have more than two people authorizing a transaction, And then you can add maybe a third thing that you do.
Yeah.
So the bank account would be important.
Yeah.
For some people, it would be the intellectual property of, you know, the special ingredients that makes McDonald's,
mm-hmm.
or Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
That intellectual property,
yep.
you might then say, okay, you know what? We need to maybe split these ingredients amongst people
mm-hmm.
and then protect that.
Mm-hmm.
What does protection mean? It means that wherever that information is stored, it needs to be secured, maybe with a username, a password, or some sort of encryption.
Yeah.
So organizations that don't have a budget, number one, need to realize what are their most important assets, learn ways of protecting it, and then try as much as possible to educate their people. And you know, education doesn't have to be driven by someone. But when you make people realize the collective threat, people can then take initiative to do something about it. So, for example, someone who runs a small business doesn't have to now say, ish, instead of running it, looking for money, I need to now teach people cybersecurity.
Mm-hmm.
Not really. What you can tell them is, people who work for me, listen, if this company runs into the ground because we didn't learn about cybersecurity, you lose your livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
For us to avoid that, here is a course that you just need to go and attend and just learn the basics of how to protect our information.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, you are giving the responsibility back to the people within that SMME, small business, to basically take it upon themselves to learn so that they can protect their income.
Yeah.
Right. The last one that I want to share with people is, you know, people look at licenses and look at a lot of things that are expensive. There's a lot of open source tools that can do things that are equally competent as proprietary software.
Mm.
Software that you find what we call commercial off-the-shelf software. From antiviruses, you've got open source antiviruses that are effective. From firewalls, you've got firewalls that are very effective. Even what we call security event and information monitoring tools, which allows you to collect a lot of logs. And those logs could just be someone logging into a PC and you see that information. It can collect all of that and analyze it. There's free tools for you to actually do that. So people just need to look long and hard on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
YouTube is always the best friend to find a lot of information.
Yeah. You know, as you're speaking, it sounds to me like at the heart of cybersecurity are really two things, awareness and really just being conscious of what's going on your screen and around you, but also accountability, because that is what keeps it in check, right? And the truth is, not everyone, even if you make the suggestion or even if you make it a mandatory thing, not everyone will actually go on the courses. I know, I remember in our organization, what used to happen is if you don't complete a course by a certain date, you get locked out of the system until you actually do the course. But I can imagine that not all organizations have those ways of accountability or those strict policies in order to ensure that their people do what they need to do. So let's say that person hasn't taken the course, or they haven't followed the procedure that is advised at work, but they are listening to the show. What can you say to somebody in an organization on how they can be aware and the things to look out for such that they don't introduce data breaches and make their organization vulnerable to cybersecurity attacks or cyber attacks rather?
Yeah, look, one of the things I would say to them is threat actors are not really after the organization, they're after your credentials that gives them access to the organization. And a lot of time people don't really think about it that much.
No, I hadn't because, well, until you said that.
You know, one of the interesting things about us people is we cannot remember a lot of things.
Yeah, this is true.
And so we reuse passwords and username and passwords all over the place. So, for example, you find someone who their work username and password is similar to their online banking username and password, which is similar to their Instagram username and password. By not taking cybersecurity serious at work, and that username and password at work is compromised, it then means those threat actors can use the same username and password because they're reusing it. They can use it on the online bank. There is a ripple effect in terms of not taking something serious in one place and it affecting even the personal life of the person. So the one thing I would say to them is that if you want to protect yourself, forget the company, protect yourself, it's actually advisable to do the cybersecurity awareness training to work. Because some of those things that you learn there, you bring them home and you actually implement them in your house and you can make your staff actually safer.
Yeah. Are there actually repercussions for somebody who became the conduit for these cyber attacks?
Well, it depends. If you look at that case that I told you about,
yeah.
it depends on what the organization wants to implement. So some organization, a civil case is fine. Some administrative case is fine. Some will then follow a criminal case.
So you can be held liable, even if you're not the one
Sorry?
Did the thing. So you can be held liable, even if you're not the one who committed the crime, but because your credentials were used.
Yeah, look, some organizations will take it serious.
Yeah.
I've seen organizations that fired people who were negligent when they sometimes run these phishing campaigns. So a phishing campaign, maybe let me just explain what phishing is.
Yeah.
You take a net, you throw it in the ocean, and then you pull out fish.
Yes.
It could be a good fish that you want or a bad fish. That's what threat actors do.
Yeah.
They cast a net.
They bait you.
So phishing campaign within an organization is the organization itself is doing the campaign and seeing which employees are susceptible or vulnerable to responding or giving up information they shouldn't give up.
Yeah.
And in some cases, some employers, when they find that this particular employee is very much susceptible, they fire them.
Yeah, because
and it's only lately, in the last 5 or 7 years, where employers have now realized that that person who was caught in a phishing campaign is actually the biggest person who will now champion, who'll be always on the lookout because they were caught and they were reprimanded. Now they're the first ones when they see an email that doesn't make sense, they're the first ones to say, hey, I'm not sure about this email. So there's always repercussions for people, but it really does depend on what the company wants.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So my last question to you is, we're living in a world where people, regardless of their technical jobs, are left with no choice but to use technology every day in a multitude of ways, right? What should a comprehensive cybersecurity awareness program cover for the average Joe or Jane who's not much of a techie?
All right. If I give you a simple answer, please don't get angry at me.
How? Okay, but maybe the simpler the better. Let's go.
Okay. So a comprehensive cybersecurity awareness program should, at the very least, educate an employee on how to protect themselves at home.
At home?
Yes. Not necessarily in the workplace. At home.
Okay. Say more.
Because in the home, when we were in COVID, you came home and you plugged your corporate laptop to the home network.
To the home network.
And one of the big things that corporates, used to talk a lot about was the fact that their network was secure.
Yes.
But when employees came home, they plugged their laptops to unsecure networks. You might find there's a personal laptop that never gets updated, that's got no antivirus, that's got no security tools, that was probably compromised on the same network as a corporate device. So meaning, whatever you're doing on that corporate device could be compromised by that personal laptop.
Jeez.
They're on the same network, or it could be that TV, or it could be that microwave that's connected to the internet, or the light bulb. So when you educate employees to be cybersecurity savvy at home, it means that they update their devices at home. They have good passwords. They have an antivirus.
Yeah.
They do a lot of things that you do in a work environment, but at home. And when they take security that serious at home, that even their own personal emails, they just don't click on any. And you know what's the interesting thing about personal emails that we get from Google or wherever we get them is those things are not really geared to protect us. So sometimes you do find phishing emails coming straight and you click on them and then you know, your stuff is compromised.
Yeah.
So when an employee now is on the lookout, even in their own personal emails or phishing emails, it increases their ability to protect themselves in the workplace. Yeah. So for me, the most comprehensive awareness training starts with the employee at home. And once they've protected themselves at home, you can be guaranteed that they'll be protected in the workplace. Just a quick story.
Yeah.
One of the biggest crimes that we're facing in South Africa at the moment is what we call business email compromise.
Okay.
Where these threat actors compromise the email of my personal email. And how that affects me is they can see my inbox just as much as I see it. And so when I go to buy a house and then I am told to transfer the money into a bank account for conveyancing, those guys change the email address and they change the information, like the banking details. And it looks like I'm being told to transfer money into a specific bank account. And this is one of the biggest crimes where a lot of people are losing money. Now, when you tell that employee to protect themselves, it means they're protecting themselves at home and they're not susceptible to that. Meaning that even in the workplace, you've got employees who are coming to work, not having these things in the back of their mind where they've lost a couple of hundred thousands. In terms of they were trying to buy property, now someone has stolen the money, they're coming to work, they're absent-minded. And now they're just clicking on things or, you know, they decide, you know what, this company doesn't pay me enough. Let me sell my credentials or let me sell access to this. And so protecting employees at home is very important.
Yeah. And, you know, I can understand why it would be efficient because people look out for their own interests. And so if you can teach me something that will safeguard me, then I'll pay attention. And in effect, I'll focus on what benefits the company as well.
Sure. Yeah, 100%.
This has been 100%. Such an insightful chat. I do want to ask a bit of a personal, not personal question. What is the proudest moment you've had in your career?
I would say the proudest moment I have in my career is working with juniors who did not know anything about cybersecurity and then bringing them to a knowledge where they are competent, where they can enter the job market and actually, you know, they work for some other company, you know, whether it's a bank or public sector.
Yeah.
It's always nice when I see them on LinkedIn and I'm seeing this person is now progressing through the world of cybersecurity.
I'm happy to announce.
I think for me, that's one of the moments where it fills me with joy. Rather than being proud, it fills me with joy to see, you know, someone is now able to live life.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we take some employees who are unemployed, some students who are unemployed. And sometimes the organization I work for can't keep them. And we give them this on-the-job training and, you know, in a year's time, in 2 years' time, this person, you know, changing jobs. And then you're like, wow, that's nice.
Yeah.
So I think for me, those moments fill me with a lot of joy and it fulfills my work. I think when I look at my work, for most people in my field, they get excited when they're able to break into systems.
Yes.
You know, like in the movies when they say I'm in, for me, it's seeing these youngsters actually getting into the field and being competent. I think for me, that's quite nice.
Oh man. And that's on impact, you know, and I believe you because even with this conversation that wasn't even an hour long, You broke it down to us so nicely. I feel like I could go into any organization and hack any system and save them from all these cyber threats and all these data breaches. So you were that effective in really conveying the message and bringing an awareness to us on cybersecurity and the importance of it for ourselves personally, but also in organizations. Thank you so much for lending us your time and your wisdom.
It was a pleasure and good night. Thank you.
Where can people find you though? Let's say somebody is out there who's in the space and wants your help and wants your mentorship. Where can they find you?
So I'm active in two places.
Yeah.
On Twitter. Mm-hmm. I actually don't tweet that much, but I do respond to tweets. Okay. You can inbox me.
Yeah.
You find me at muyowa@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Sorry, that's my email address.
Is that the one?
No, that's not the one.
Okay.
That's the public one. Feel free to also email me there if you want to actually get in touch with me.
Yeah.
Muyowa is muyowa mm-hmm. @gmail.com. Mm-hmm. You can find me on Twitter mm-hmm. @muyowa. And then you can also find me on LinkedIn. LinkedIn, I don't respond, but I try and be active there.
Okay.
Muyowa Mutemwa. On LinkedIn, you should be able to get me there.
You are such a delight. Thank you for this insightful chat. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.